Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I, of course, am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. NFL divisional round playoff weekend coming up. Bask in his glory, rejoicing it. What a great time of the year this is. Four should be great football games coming up this weekend. Now we're down to the nitty-gritty. We've eliminated the trash. Both seven seeds lost this past weekend, Indianapolis and Chicago going home. Now we're down to the eight best football teams in the NFL for this calendar season. The next step is the conference championship. After that is the Super Bowl. So obviously these games are of major consequence and importance. I can't wait to watch this shit. So this podcast is about my predictions, pontifications, and prognostications about NFL playoff weekend, NFL divisional playoff weekend. Let's go ahead and get it started with Kansas City versus Cleveland, your defending Super Bowl champions. Much to my chagrin, Kansas City Chiefs have effectively had 2 weeks off. They rested their starters in Week 17, taking the loss to the L.A. Chargers in that game. So they really haven't played since Week 16 versus Atlanta, and they were less than impressive in that game. They were less than impressive down the stretch. Coming into this game now versus a Cleveland Browns team that just beat the dog shit out of the Pittsburgh Steelers last Sunday, 48-37. I would say the biggest win in Cleveland Browns history, maybe. I don't even think that's a stretch. I don't think that's a reach. I don't think I'm engaging in hyperbole. That might have been the biggest victory in Cleveland Browns, let's say, in the Super Bowl era. Let's say that's the biggest win in franchise history in the Super Bowl era. They did win a championship in 1964, but that predates the Super Bowl. But I would say in the Super Bowl era, that was the biggest win in Cleveland Browns history. So how do they rebound from that? How do they follow up on that one? You know, is Cleveland still going to be caught up in the euphoria from last week? Are they still celebrating that Pittsburgh win, still popping bottles from that? You know, still basking in the glory? Or have they put that big win from last week behind them and channeled their focus and their energy on this week's game versus the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs? Good news for Cleveland. They will have their head coach back on the sideline this week, Kevin Stefanski. Coming out of COVID-19 protocol, last week he coached the game versus Pittsburgh from his basement. Or actually, he didn't coach the game. He watched the game from his basement. Alex Van Pelt was calling plays during that game. They had guys filling in all over the place on the sideline. Guys on the field are getting Denzel Ward back this week, as well as defensive back Kevin Johnson. Cleveland definitely going to need both of those guys back this week going against that high-powered Kansas City offense. You're going to need as much help in the secondary as you possibly can muster going against the elite offensive firepower that the Kansas City Chiefs possess. Ty Hill, Hardman, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, Eric Bieniemy, Andy Reid on the sideline calling plays, the evil genius Andy Reid. Andy Reid is notorious for emptying the clip on teams where he gets a full week to prepare. Kansas City, as I alluded to earlier, really hasn't played in 2 weeks. They're a number one seed in the AFC, so they had a first-round bye under the new playoff format. Only one team gets a first-round bye, which probably gave Andy Reid plenty of time to come up with brand new offensive innovations and formations and schemes and all types of different ways to use the plethora of weapons that they have in Kansas City. You're probably going to see Patrick Mahomes going in motion. You might see four guys line up in the backfield and execute a spin move like the old school Temptations, going in different directions and run a flea flicker, fumble Ruski, hook and ladder, Statue of Liberty behind the back pass between Mahomes' legs for a touchdown to Tyreek Hill as he backflips into the end zone. I mean, who knows? Like I said earlier, Andy Reid is notorious for this. You give him a week to prepare, he will come back and fuck you up. And it's not like, even with the additions of Ward and Johnson back to the lineup for Cleveland, it's not like they have a stellar elite defense. Roethlisberger threw it 68 times last week and was not sacked. Now this week you're going up against arguably the best quarterback in pro football, Patrick Mahomes. The formula to beat Mahomes is you got to get pressure on him. That's been seen before by the Chargers last year, by the 49ers in the Super Bowl, by the Falcons going back a few weeks ago, who gave Kansas City all they could handle in that game. It came down to a last-second drive. Mahomes threw a touchdown to, I think, Mecole Hardman to give him the go-ahead score, and Atlanta did what Atlanta does. They figured out a way to choke, fail, and fuck it up at the end of the game, and they missed a field goal. And Kansas City won, but that game was a lot tougher than anybody thought it was going to be coming into it. Kansas City did not play well down the stretch. They had issues protecting Mahomes. Mahomes had issues turning the ball over, trying to force plays when they're not there. relying maybe too much on his elite arm strength and his overall talent, which is prodigious in itself. I mean, he's the most, like I said, in my estimation, he's the best quarterback in the NFL, but he is prone to making mistakes. There's a reason, the biggest reason why he slipped to the 10th pick in the draft. Scouts and people in the NFL level did not like his propensity to turn the ball over in college and take risks and take chances and rely on that elite arm strength and talent to try to make plays when plays aren't there. It's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a gift and a curse. But if you can be patient and disciplined in your defense and play zone and get pressure with your front four, that's been shown to give Mahomes trouble. He will turn the ball over in those scenarios. The problem for Cleveland is they don't have much of a four-man pass rush. They have Myles Garrett and not much else. Olivier Vernon is not playing in this game. He's injured. He's out. Didn't play last week versus Pittsburgh. So you have one elite pass rusher trying to get to Patrick Mahomes. I'm not sure if that's enough. I'm not sure if Cleveland can implement the strategy that San Francisco had in the Super Bowl. The 49ers had Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, D. Ford, even though he was hurt in that game. But San Francisco had an elite pass rush with four down linemen that can create pressure without having to send extra help. Cleveland doesn't have that. They have Myles Garrett, like I said. That's it as far as great pass rushers. And if you have to send help, if you have to keep blitzing Mahomes, he will carve you up. I asked Baltimore earlier on Monday night. Blitzing Patrick Mahomes doesn't work. So I look for Kansas City to put a lot of points on the board in this game. When I look at the fact that Reed has 1 week to prepare for Cleveland, I look at what the deficiencies in Cleveland's defense. I look at the fact that the Browns just signed Brian Allen off of Pittsburgh's practice squad. For those of you who don't remember, Brian Allen started the season with San Francisco, got called up from the practice squad to play against Miami, got torched, got cooked, got glazed, he was barbecue chicken out there versus Devontae Parker, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the Miami Dolphins. He got his ass kicked, and now he's on the Cleveland Browns roster. That tells me they're pretty desperate in the secondary on the back end. If you're going to be, this is the worst possible opponent to be playing against. If you're that desperate in your secondary, you got to sign someone like Brian Allen just to fill the roster out. This game, if you're Cleveland, last week I said the worst thing they can do is put the game in the hands of Baker Mayfield. For this game, Baker's going to have to make plays because, as I've said so many times about Kansas City, you can give them 31 points just getting off the bus. They're going to get theirs. They're going to score points. You might be able to hold them down for a little bit. I can see a scenario where Cleveland like goes up like 14-0 in this game. They come out on a hot start, riding the wave from last week. But as we saw all last year, Kansas City can be down in the game and come right back on you that quickly. You know, all you have to do, look no further than last year's playoffs. Kansas City was down 24-0 to Houston in the divisional round of last year's playoffs, and they went on a 51-7 run to close the game out. Down 24-0 and win the game 51-31. That's fucking ridiculous. But that's the firepower of Kansas City and what they're rolling with and what they bring to the field every time they step on it. So once again, going back to Baker Mayfield, this game might have to be reminiscent of the last time Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes matched up against each other on the football field. That was a Big 12 shootout in 2016. Texas Tech versus Oklahoma. Sooners came out on top in that one 66-59. Baker Mayfield, 543 yards passing in that game on 27 of 36 passing, 7 touchdown passes, no interceptions. Patrick Mahomes in that game, 52 of 88, 734 yards passing, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. I repeat, Patrick Mahomes in a football game, I know this is college, I know it's the Big 12, but goddamn, this is Division I football versus a nationally top 10 ranked football team. When you had no weapons on your roster, no one on that Texas Tech squad other than Mahomes was drafted in the NFL draft that year, especially in the first round. There was no day one NFL talent that Mahomes is playing with. And he goes 52 of 88, 734, 5 scores and 1 pick. He threw 88 passes and only got picked once. Get the fuck out of here, man. That dude's a walking cheat code. Like, I hate the motherfucker, but I just appreciate his game as a football fan. I don't really hate him. I take that back. Like, but losing the Super Bowl to that guy, like, I take some solace in that. Like, at least we didn't lose to a scrub. We lost to the best quarterback in the world. We lost to a guy who just makes impossible plays on target, on schedule, off schedule. Footwork can be sloppy. His arm strength is enough to make up for it. We lost to a guy who's, like I said, a living, walking, breathing cheat code in Patrick Mahomes. 52 of 88, 734, 5 scores, 1 pick on 88 pass attempts. Patrick Mahomes is unfair. It's going to have to be a shootout like that for Cleveland to win this football game. Like I said, you can give Kansas City 31 points just getting off the bus. Their defense is not good enough. They're going to have to force turnovers like they did last week, forcing 5 turnovers versus Pittsburgh to have a chance to win this football game. Cleveland is 11-0 whenever they win or tie the turnover differential this season, including playoffs. 1-5, however, with a negative turnover differential. So to me, it's just that simple. Cleveland has to force turnovers, and Baker Mayfield has to play well. He played well last week. He was 21-34, 263, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He was outstanding last week. He's going to have to raise his game to an even higher level than that to beat Kansas City in Kansas City, to match Patrick Mahomes score for score, play for play. Chubb and Kareem Hunt, the former Kansas City Chief, they're going to have to play a big game as well. But at the same time, I mean, every team when they're going into a game versus Kansas City has the same mindset that we got to dominate the line of scrimmage. We got to get a running game going. We got to keep Kansas City's offense off the field, keep Mahomes on the sidelines, and it never works out. So many teams have had that mindset versus Kansas City, and it might work for a 2.5, 3 quarters, and then Kansas City goes on a 31-0 run to close the game out. You get embarrassed and lose, and that's just what they do. It's just too much firepower to stop and too many smart people calling the plays and engineering everything that happens on the field. Eric Bieniemy, Andy Reid got a week off. The game plan going to be critical. This is a team in Kansas City that's only lost one game in the last calendar year. Last game, the only game they lost, well, 2 games. But week 17 to me doesn't count, really, because the starters were rested. They weren't even trying to win that game. They were just getting ready for the playoffs. They already had home field sewn up. But then you go back to that Raider game early in the season. It took 41 points to beat them, which is why I will once again say you have to score points to beat this Kansas City Chiefs team. I think Cleveland can get theirs, but KC can also get theirs as well. So to make a prediction on this game, Kansas City is a 10-point favorite with an over-under of 55 last time I checked. I'm going to take the over in that game. I think it's going to be a high-scoring shootout, not as high scoring, not 66-59 high scoring, but high scoring nonetheless. I'm going to say Kansas City 37, Cleveland 31. Chiefs move on to the AFC Championship game. Good season for the Cleveland Browns. No shame in losing to the defending champions on their home field. But the buck stops here for Cleveland. KC moving on 37-31. Let's move on to the other matchup in the AFC. Buffalo Bills hosting the Baltimore Ravens Saturday night and what is expected to be a cold and snowy Orchard Park, upstate New York, Buffalo. The conditions could play a factor in this game. You got a matchup in this game with 2 quarterbacks from the 2018 draft. 3 quarterbacks from the 2018 draft are playing this weekend. Baker Mayfield, the other one, playing against Kansas City. And in this game, you have Lamar Jackson going up against Josh Allen. This is a game, once again, that proves what I've been saying the whole time on this podcast, what I firmly believe when I talk football with people. Football is, was, and always will be a game predicated on matchups. 4 basic principles: blocking, tackling, matchups, and game plan. So in this instance, you have a team in Buffalo who has a soft rush defense, as you saw last week. Indianapolis was gashing them with big runs the entire game. Jonathan Taylor was running crazy on them. You know, now you have a team in Baltimore coming in who thrives in the running game with Lamar Jackson on the design quarterback runs, J.K. Dobbins out the backfield. On the flip side of that, Buffalo struggles with their running game. Singletary is hurt. They got other running backs who are pretty much irrelevant going up against a team in Baltimore who is adept and strong in man coverage. That's how they like to play. They like to blitz and send extra pressure. But they got Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters in the back end, so they're comfortable in leaving both of those guys on the island, sending pressure and taking their chances because they trust both of those guys in the back end to hold up. So that's the second matchup in this game. Baltimore's man coverage versus Buffalo's elite players at the skill position, Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, Gabriel Davis, John Brown, on the perimeter with Josh Allen pulling the trigger in the pocket. This season, Josh Allen is 5-0 versus top 10 total defenses this season with wins over the Rams, Chargers, 49ers, Steelers, and Indianapolis Colts last week. So he's proven he can answer the challenge when going up against elite defenses in this league. What's he going to be able to do this weekend going up against Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters? You know, Peters especially is going to take chances, try to come up with a big play, jump some routes, come up with a pick. It's going to be interesting to see how they line up how Buffalo was able to use Stephon Diggs, how they move him around, that game of chess between offensive coordinator from Buffalo, Brian Daboll, versus Baltimore defensive coordinator Wink Martindale. So there's so many things in this game to pay attention to. As I alluded to earlier, if it snows, if you get inclement weather in this game, how's that going to affect Lamar and his ability to run and create plays out of the pocket? We've seen Lamar play in inclement weather games before. I think back to last season, December 1st versus San Francisco. It was pouring down, raining. It was a monsoon. You know, the whole field was covered in shit. The whole game, the whole day, the weather kind of resembled that scene in Forrest Gump where Forrest was in Vietnam. He said, you know, one day it just started raining. That's how I looked for this game last year for Baltimore versus San Francisco. But Lamar was able to keep his footing, was able to make plays in and out of the pocket, especially in the run game. And that was during rain. This game for Sunday night in Buffalo is talking about snow. Lamar's never played in snow before. Lamar's a Florida boy. He don't know shit about that. He don't know anything about playing in snow. He even came out this week and said he hoped it doesn't snow. So psychologically, he's already thinking about it. Mentally, it's in his head. And you wonder, if it does snow, how's that going to affect him for someone who's never seen or played football in snow before? So that's an X factor to the game and something I'll also be paying attention to. If it does snow, how does Lamar Jackson respond to trying to cut and make movements in the snow? You saw earlier this year in game versus Cleveland on Monday night, in game Baltimore ended up winning, Lamar was having significant issues with his footwork, with his cleats, staying on his feet. He was slipping and falling all over the field. He injured himself during that game, went to the locker room, came back out, threw a touchdown pass to Hollywood Brown. But that's something to keep an eye on. If it does snow, how is that going to affect Lamar Jackson? So to me, this game comes down to those three things. How does Buffalo match up with Baltimore's man coverage? Can Buffalo stop Baltimore's running game? And how is Lamar Jackson going to respond potentially to having to play in snow? Something he's never done before, something he did not grow up with growing up in the state of Florida. I think it comes down to those three things. I feel like if Buffalo can exploit Patrick Queen, Ravens rookie linebacker who has struggled mightily this season in pass coverage, in particular with Cole Beasley at the slot, even though Beasley's playing with a banged up knee, doesn't even practice during the week, he's still going to be out there. And this is a playoff game. It's the biggest playoff game that Buffalo's had in about 25 or so years. So I expect Cole Beasley to be out there. I expect Buffalo to get some big plays exploiting the blitzes that Baltimore is going to bring. I think back to this earlier this season on Monday night when Baltimore blitzed and blitzed Patrick Mahomes, as I said earlier. Blitzing Patrick Mahomes doesn't work. He carved him up that night and made big play after big play. Josh Allen's cut from the same mold as Patrick Mahomes. He's almost in that same category as far as being an elite quarterback. I think Allen's a top five quarterback in the league right now. And with the weapons and firepower he has on the outside, I think he's going to be able to make some big plays similar to what Mahomes made going up against that Baltimore man coverage and preference and insistence on blitzing and sending extra pressure. However, I saw the way Buffalo was gashing the run game last week with Jonathan Taylor. I think J.K. Dobbins can do the same thing, along with Gus Edwards and Lamar Jackson, going up against a defense that has given up 150 yards five times this season. I think Baltimore will be able to get whatever they want on the ground going against Buffalo. I think defensively, they should be able to make Buffalo one-dimensional, concede the passing game to Buffalo and make Josh Allen win this game. As great as a quarterback as Josh Allen is, he does have a propensity to try to do too much. You saw that last week with a fumble we had that was, fortunately for him and Buffalo Bills fans, recovered by Buffalo. But if you put the game in his hands and try to make him go out there and be a hero and win the game, I think he will fuck up and make a mistake here and there. So when I look at Baltimore able to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football, you saw what they did to Derrick Henry last week, holding the NFL's leading rusher to just 40 yards on 18 attempts, going up against a team with a depleted and deficient running game, minus Zach Moss, who's out for the season with a season-ending ankle injury. Devin Singletary is going to have to carry the load. He really hasn't been able to do that at all this season. I think Buffalo's weaknesses get exposed in this game, lack of a running game, inability to stop the other team's running game, and the lack of an effective pass rush with just four down linemen. I see Baltimore winning in this game, a close, tough, down-to-the-wire, knockdown, drag-out, physical type of football game. I like Baltimore 25, Buffalo 21. This game is a 2.5-point spread, with Buffalo, the home team, being a 2.5-point favorite, over under 49.5. I like the points to be under, and I like Baltimore to cover, winning the game 25-21. So with all that being said, my AFC Championship game prediction, Baltimore Ravens, Kansas City Chiefs for AFC, for American Football Conference supremacy. That's who I'm picking. I got Kansas City over Cleveland. I got Baltimore over Buffalo. Let's move to the NFC. I'm starting the Superdome. I'm starting the Big Easy. I'm starting the NFC South. Round three, Buccaneers versus Saints. The first two games these two teams have played against each other this season have not been close. Last time on Sunday Night Football, New Orleans once again beat seven different shades of shit down Tampa Bay's leg 38-3. And wasn't even that close. First game of the season, New Orleans 34, Tampa Bay 23. Tom Brady was horrible in that game. He was horrible in both games. This season, the GOAT has a passing rating below 80 in three games this season. Two of those games were versus New Orleans. Week 1, the 34-23 loss, Brady was 23-36, 239, two touchdowns, two picks. One of them was a pick six to Jackrabbit Jenkins. Quarterback rating of 78.4, got sacked three times for 15 yards. And the second meeting with New Orleans in Tampa on Sunday Night Football was a hideous 22-38, 209 yards, zero touchdown passes, three interceptions, including one wounded duck that Brady threw across the middle, just threw the ball up for grabs, being chased out of the pocket. Just a terrible decision to even throw the ball, an even worse pass. So needless to say, the GOAT, the greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, has struggled this season versus the New Orleans Saints. Biggest reason for that is that ferocious Saints defense, their front seven is one of the best in pro football. 45 sacks this season, which is eighth in the NFL. 112 quarterback hits, which is tied for fifth. So needless to say, this Saints defense gets after it. They're getting Trey Hendrickson back this week from a neck injury. He did not play last week versus Chicago. You add him to the mix with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Demario Davis, Cameron Jordan, Sheldon Rankins, Marshawn Lattimore, Marcus Williams, Malcolm Jenkins, Jackrabbit Jenkins. The Saints defense is better than the Saints offense. I mean, it sounds crazy to say that. You would never say that 5-10 years ago when Breeze was really in his prime. You know, the offense was carrying the team, but now the defense, well, a lot of the draft picks they made over the years and some of the guys they brought in through free agency, the defense has really improved and is carrying that football team in New Orleans and has them in prime position to make a run to the Super Bowl. Offensively, I'm not that intimidated by them anymore. I don't think Drew Brees at this stage of the game can successfully throw it downfield with consistency. His biggest game right now is checkdowns, intermediate routes across the middle of the field, thrown into Kamara out the backfield. At this stage of the game, he's not much of a threat to push it down the field, which is why I don't understand why teams will play New Orleans with a zone defense, because Brees will pick that apart. I think the best plan of attack versus New Orleans offense is to play man coverage, cover one, single high safety, and just make Brees throw it down the field. Because if you sit back in zone, Drew Brees is good enough, smart enough, still accurate enough to exploit whatever holes in coverage that you have in your zone defense. So I think the best plan of attack against him is line up in man and just take your chances and make him throw it down the field and make him beat you. If Tampa can do that, Tampa can be successful. There's a way for Tampa to win this game. I think there's one way. I think offensively, Tampa is 5-0 since the Week 13 bye week, and Brady's played lights out. And Tom Brady, since the bye week, has 14 touchdown passes, one interception. The GOAT has lived up to the billing ever since the bye week in Week 13. As first reported right here in the Dion Gordon podcast, I told people all Tom Brady needed was a break, a bye week. And Tampa had a late bye week, Week 13. You know, Brady's 43. He played 12 straight weeks of football. He looked like it. He looked tired. He needed that bye week. The team needed that bye week to reset, refocus, get their shit together. And they've been 5-0 ever since with 14 touchdowns for Brady and one interception. He's cut down on the picks, cut down on the turnovers. You know, he's carried that team. Ronald Jones has been banged up with a calf injury. He's officially listed as questionable for the game on Sunday. Leonard Fournette really hasn't been that impressive in the ground game. So they've had to heavily rely on Tom Brady in the passing game to carry him to this point. And he's come through for them. He's been everything as advertised for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is a team that hasn't made a playoff since 2007. This is a team that hasn't won double-digit games since 2007. This is a team that until last Saturday with the victory over the Washington football team, that was the first playoff game the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have won since Super Bowl 37. They haven't won, up until last Saturday, they had not won a playoff game since 2003. Super Bowl 37, Tampa 48. Raiders 21. That was the last time they won a playoff game up until last Saturday. So Brady's already, to me, Brady's already done his job for Tampa. He's made them relevant. He's made them a team people give a fuck about and talk about. He's put them back on the NFL radar. He's already led them to an 11-win season. He's already led them to a playoff win. He's gotten them to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, something they haven't done in over a decade. So to me, Brady's already done his job. People are going to talk about this game and ask the question, is Tom Brady's legacy on the line? That's fucking ridiculous. That's an asinine question. How is your legacy on the line when you're a six-time Super Bowl champion? You've already proven everything. There's nothing left. There's nothing left for Tom Brady to prove. He's done it all. This is just icing on the cake. This is a cherry on the sundae. This is just for shits and giggles. This is for posterity. This is for future generations to talk about. He's already proven himself. Compare his season this year to Bill Belichick in New England. The Patriots went 6-10, only had 8 touchdown passes between 3 quarterbacks, and missed the playoffs. Tom Brady went 11-5 and threw 40 touchdown passes. You want to tell me his legacy's on the line? What is there left for Tom Brady to prove? He's 43. He's just out there playing because he loves the game. So to me, when people ask that question about Tom Brady's legacy going into this playoff game, he has nothing on the line. If anything, Drew Brees has a lot on the line in this game. Drew Brees has won one Super Bowl in his career. That was in the 2009 season, Super Bowl 44, I want to say, versus the Indianapolis Colts. He was MVP of the game. But since winning that Super Bowl, Tom Brady's won 3 since 2009. So once again, to me, there's no pressure whatsoever in Brady. He can lose 3 times in one season to a team. Just tip the cap to New Orleans. They're a better football team. I think they're going to win the game because they have a better front 7. They can get pressure on Brady. But to me, for the conversation of who has more pressure on him going into this game, it's Drew Brees. You think about all the playoff collapses the Saints have had over the years, the Minneapolis Miracle versus the Minnesota Vikings, the pass interference that wasn't called versus the Rams in the conference championship game. You go back to last season, Kirk Cousins came in there and crushed the buildings on him. Year after year after year, playoff failure after playoff failure. You can go back to 2011 when they lost in the divisional rounds in San Francisco. I mean, this has been a recurring trend. There have been good Saints football teams that'll win 12, 13, 14 games in the season and then shit the bed in the playoffs. So to me, you have to understand, you have to think, you have to believe that history is fresh in their mind. There's a lot of players on this team who've been a part of this team on this roster for the past 3 years. They were on the field for the Minneapolis Miracle. Marcus Williams missed that tackle. You know, he missed it badly. He just dove out of the play. He looked like every wrestler that wrestles Booker T and just conveniently puts themselves in a position for the scissor kick. That's how he looked on that play. He looked terrible. Like he was trying to bend over to tie his shoes, looking for loose change. Dove out of that play. He's still on that roster. You don't think that play is still in his mind? You don't think that play still haunts him? You don't think the playoff failures of the New Orleans Saints the past couple of years still fucking with him? All those guys are still on the team. Michael Thomas, Lattimore, Drew Brees, obviously, Alvin Kamara. The only guy who wasn't there for all this playoff misery was Emmanuel Sanders, who was in San Francisco and Denver the past couple years. But everyone else has pretty much been there through all this playoff misery. The Saints are favored to win this game. They're supposed to win this game. They've beaten the Tampa Bay Buccaneers both times they played them this season and beat them badly. All pressure is on New Orleans for this game. So with all that being said, I'll make a prediction. I've predicted the Saints to get to the Super Bowl this year versus the Kansas City Chiefs, so it would be foolish of me to pick against New Orleans in this game. So as I've already detailed and outlined, I think it's a bad matchup for Tampa Bay. Unless they can do something schematically to compensate for the lack of talent and depth they have up front going against New Orleans' front 7, I just don't see it happening. Tampa right now, one of their guards is on injured reserve with an ankle injury, Kappa. So you're missing one of your top starting guards going against a ferocious front 7 on the road. This is a team that's had your number. New Orleans should win this game. I can't say that enough. I'm picking them to win this game. I'm picking them to get to the Super Bowl and play versus Kansas City. I do like what Tampa Bay has done since the bye week with pretty much turning the keys over to Tom Brady and running Tom Brady's offense. A lot of 2 tight end sets for Tampa Bay with Cameron Brate and Rob Gronkowski running a lot of play action. And then taking shots downfield, which is what Arians and Leftwich like to do. They've gotten better at that since the bye week, but in this game, I still don't think it's enough. You know, schematically, there's only so much you can do. At some point, the talent will win out. I think New Orleans wins this game, I want to say 28-23. moving on to the NFC Championship game this week, where they will face. Now it gets interesting. Now it gets spicy. Now it's time for the upset special, the upset pick of the week. Last week, I accurately predicted that the Cleveland Browns would beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. I hate to say I told you so. Well, actually, I didn't. I will bask in my glory and revel in my prediction. Cleveland came through for me last week. This week, I'm saying the LA Rams will walk into Lambeau Field and beat the Green Bay Packers. You heard it here first in the Dion Gordon podcast. I got the Rams beating the Green Bay Packers. I'm about to explain why. Defense and the running game. The Rams come into this game, the number one defense in the NFL. The front four is ferocious. Ask Russell Wilson how that front four get down. The Packers' offensive line is banged up. They're missing Bakhtiari at left tackle. It's going to be a problem this week going up against Leonard Floyd. And of course, you got to deal with Aaron Donald, who's playing through a pulled or torn ribcage muscle. He's no doubt he's going to play this week in this game. This is the playoffs, divisional round. He's going to suit up and play this week. But the heavyweight fight in this game, the game within the game, the individual matchup that I think will determine this football game, who wins and who loses, is Devontae Adams versus Jalen Ramsey. The Rams' elite shutdown corner versus arguably and debatably the best receiver in pro football. And you can say Ramsey is the best corner in the league. So this is going to be a fun matchup to watch. This is a matchup in the NFL's number one scoring offense versus the number one scoring defense. We have not seen a matchup like this in Super Bowl 51 when the Atlanta Falcons, of course, shit the bed in the most ridiculous, catastrophic fashion, blowing a 28-3 lead versus New England Patriots and losing that game. The Falcons had the number one scoring offense. The Patriots were the number one scoring defense. You know, I also think back to Super Bowl 48 when the Broncos came in with a high-powered offense, scoring over 600 points that season and only put up 8 in the Super Bowl versus Seattle with that Legion of Boom defense. Typically, whenever a high-powered, high-flying offense matches up with a great number one-ranked defense, the defense wins the game, typically. Another reason I like the Rams in this game is the running game. Cam Akers doing work last week versus the Seattle Seahawks. Cam last week had 28 carries for 131 yards, one touchdown. He's going to have to replicate that same performance this week because Jared Goff is banged up, coming back from a broken thumb. They injured in week 16 versus Seattle. We had pins inserted into his thumb. He was held out of the lineup until John Walford went down early in that game versus Seattle, and Goff had to come back in and play. He was the only quarterback they had left on the roster after Walford went down, and he came in, he went about 9 of 19 for about 55 and one score, but he didn't look good throwing the ball. The ball was wobbly coming out of his hands. He had issues with his grip and ball placement and accuracy, and that problem, you know, it was a clear day last week versus Seattle. It's going to be cold. It's Green Bay, and it's January. It's going to be cold, probably wet. It's going to be even more difficult to grip and throw the football this week. So they're going to have to lean heavily on their running game. And because Goff has been inconsistent this year anyway, threw for less than 3,000 yards, only 20 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions. And that's the only thing that really gives me pause, that makes me trepidatious about picking the Rams in this game, is Jared Goff. He's going to have to make some throws here and there to win the game, but I don't think the game plan should be thrust too heavily on Jared Goff's shoulders for them to win. It's going to have to come down to the defense and Cam Akers, the talent that the Rams have in the secondary, not only Jalen Ramsey, but also Darius Williams, who had that pick six last week versus Seattle, the front four, most notably Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd, and the running game with Cam Akers. The three games Green Bay lost this season, they gave up 113 yards rushing to Ronald Jones from Tampa Bay, 163 to Minnesota's Dalvin Cook, who also had 4 touchdowns in that game, and 90 yards to Indianapolis's Jonathan Taylor. Their run defense did get a little bit better down the stretch. They held Derrick Henry in check on that Sunday night game in the snow. But at the end of the day, it's still suspect. And that's, you look at what happened in Green Bay last season going against San Francisco, giving up 285 in the NFC Championship game. Raheem Mostert's still running. Raheem Mostert looked like a slave trying to escape to the north last year versus that Green Bay run defense. It's gotten better this season, but like, as I just said, in the games they lost, the other team's running back had a good game. I think another key to this game is going to be the way the game starts. Who gets off to the better start in this game? Green Bay this season has outscored their opponents 299-163 in the first half this season, including a 219-92 edge in the second quarter. Aaron Rodgers on the season has 22 touchdown passes in the second quarter alone. He threw 48 touchdown passes all season. 22 of those were in the second quarter. Aaron Rodgers should be league MVP. Those are ridiculous numbers. Green Bay has outscored their opponents 124-107 in the fourth quarter in overtime, but they made up for that by building such big early leads. However, the Rams are 37-0 in games they've led at halftime during Sean McVay's four-year tenure. So as far as I'm concerned, this game can be won or lost in the first half, in the first or second quarter. If the Rams have the lead at halftime, like I just said, McVay's 37-0 whenever the Rams have the lead at halftime. But Green Bay is notorious for getting off the fast, quick, explosive starts. So if the Rams can weather that storm, not just the snow and the forecast, but the Green Bay Packers offense, and at least stay in the game, let's say down by one score, maybe even 10 points at the most, or if they could just have the lead at halftime, I think it favors them going forward in the third and fourth quarter. Lean on that running game with Cam Akers and just hope your defense can match up. They got pressure with four down linemen last week versus Seattle. The Packers' offensive line is banged up, as I said earlier, with Bakhtiari being out and going against an elite front four that the Rams are bringing. And with the talent on the back end, I think their defense keeps this game close. I don't think Goff has to do too much. He's going to have to make some throws here and there. It's going to be tough with his thumb throwing in cold weather conditions, but I don't think the game's going to be too much in his hands. And like I said, I think the defense for the Rams can carry the day, even against an explosive offense. But if it really comes down to that one-on-one matchup of Jalen Ramsey versus Devontae Adams, whoever wins and loses that matchup, their team is going to win the game. And I look at not just Jalen Ramsey by himself, but I look at the entire secondary, the entire defense. I think the Rams are going to come out with a victory in this one. I got an upset special. It's the L.A. Rams. I'm going to say they manufactured 27 points between defense, special teams, causing turnovers, et cetera. And Green Bay gets 24, but that gives the Rams a win. 27-24, Rams with the victory, upset special of the week. I got the Rams taking this one. So I got a Rams-Saints NFC Championship game. And I got a Baltimore-Kansas City AFC Championship game. Those are my picks. We'll see what happens tomorrow. We'll see what happens this weekend. It's going to be a great weekend of football. Fun to watch. NFL divisional round playoffs. This is a great time of the year. Even if your team's not even in it. The 49ers didn't make the playoffs this year, but I'm fine with it. I expected it. I called it during the season. They're not going to make it. So I'm just resigning myself to watching good football, watching these teams play, see how these names play out. What happens. I'm looking forward to it. I'm psyched about it. That's some DC, that's some DMV lingo for y'all. I'm psyched about this. Let's see what happens. NFL playoffs, divisional round. Let's get it. That's it for the Deion Gordon podcast. Picks for me rolling. I'm out.